Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Bowl SSE. I am your very own host, Rudrani Datta, and I'm here to kickstart the third episode of Bowl SSE. And today we are going to talk about holistic environmentalism. After successfully completing the last two episodes, wherein we were really privileged to have some of the eminent guests like Dr. T.P. Shashikumar, followed by Arun Krishnamurthy, and we were really able to gain some great insights on topics like sustainable development goals and dynamics of flood management. Today, we have with us another such eminent persona who will guide us with her insights on holistic environmentalism. Before we proceed ahead, this is for all our new listeners and viewers who have connected with us right now. Welcome to Bowl SSE, a series of podcasts hosted by Enactus Sri Aurobindo College. Enactus is an international organization led by student leaders and change makers across the world who work day in and out to make a difference in the society. Bowl SSE is a podcast that entails intriguing talk shows, interactions, discussions, and topics ranging from environment, entrepreneurship, and much more. As the famous phrase goes, today's world is shrinking, and a direct implication of that is there is no such field knowing about which will be of no use to you. Every topic is meant to be unraveled, every stone is meant to be turned, and we embark on this journey with this series of podcasts. So without further ado, sit back and relax, and let me call upon our today's guest, Sumaira Abdullah Ali, an environmentalist from Mumbai. She is the founder of the NGO Awas Foundation and convener of the Movement Against Intimidation, Threat and Revenge Against Activist, Mitra. She is a prolific woman who has pioneered some of the greatest initiatives taken in this field, starting with her raising awareness on issues which are usually subdued and thus making it mainstream, like noise pollution, for instance. She has done it all. She is the first environmentalist who brought the issue of illegal sand mining and successfully made the issue to be acknowledged both nationally and internationally. NGO Awas Foundation, under her guidance, has been working relentlessly to make a difference all around. Her list of accolades are never ending. She is the recipient of Mother Teresa Award for Social Justice in the year of 2010. Ashoka Fellowship Award for the year of 2008, and many more such awards. A 7-time TEDx speaker and a speaker at several UNEP events, we are indeed exhilarated to have her with us today. Thank you so much, ma'am, for joining us amidst your schedule. I honestly cannot reiterate enough on how privileged I'm feeling right now to have a talk with you face to face, back to on such a topic like holistic environmentalism.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here and happy to meet all of you.
Thank you so much, ma'am. So, ma'am, I would straight away start with our today's session, and I would request you to break the term holistic environmentalism, which is a topic for today's podcast, for our viewers and listeners out there to understand this entire aspect deep down.
Well, holistic environment is holistic by its very nature because it surrounds us everywhere. Wherever we may be, whether we believe that we care for the environment or we don't, we are surrounded by it. And every aspect of our life has something to do with it. Whether we are in whatever profession we may be, including students, we interact with the environment because the air we breathe is part of the environment. The water that we drink and use is part of the environment. And so is everything else. So, environment is holistic by its very nature. I think, in fact, it might even be a redundant term to say holistic environment, because environment is holistic. But apart from that kind of common sense explanation, the United Nations in March of this year came up with their largest ever report, which was kind of a synthesis of 30 of their reports. And they came to the conclusion and said that all the issues facing the world today have to be tackled together because they are not separate. So whether they're women's issues or their human rights issues, or they're to do with refugees or climate change or just about anything else, everything ties back to the environment. So it's not just the common sense explanation, it's an actual statement of the United Nations Secretary General, who released the report and said this. What does it mean when you say everything is interconnected and tied? For example, I mentioned women's issues, which on the face of it is completely separate from environment. But actually, when you look at women's issues and there is a climate change related event like a flood, as happened recently in Uttarakhand, or a cyclone which goes through Maharashtra, which, you know, we've had cyclones are a new phenomenon tied to climate change in Mumbai. So any of these things, the conclusions of the United Nations state that women are disproportionately affected because they are the ones who traditionally care for their households, who have to keep their families together, who have to navigate the fallout of losing your home in a more direct manner than men do. They are also more affected because of patriarchal attitudes, because women are the ones who are not taught how to swim traditionally in greater numbers than men. And therefore, in a flood, more women die than men. Even that kind of thing. Socioeconomically, they are more backward than men because typically they don't own the land and they don't have their own money, their own ability to recover from these issues. So if you take just a seemingly unconnected issue like women's rights, for example, in every way possible, it is tied to environment because a woman's daily life is tied to her environment. A child's daily life is tied to his environment in the same way. If you bring up a child in a world where there's severe air pollution, as we are doing today, you are bringing up a child with more health issues, respiratory health issues. And the mother has to look after the child, and the child may suffer from asthma and such related issues throughout his life. So for example, again, the UN says that respiratory issues, air pollution related issues, are the most serious health issues in the world today. More serious than COVID, more serious than anything else. And it's not an accident that COVID itself is a respiratory issue and brought about possibly by environmental change and climate change, because we are having closer than ever interface with things we are not supposed to, wildlife. When we take away the environment, we talk of man-animal conflict, but actually that's again tied to the fact that we are not giving them less and less space. We are having biodiversity loss. We are seeing a rise in invasive species, which should not be there. Sometimes in places like Bangalore, for example, you see the rise of something called Congress grass, which never used to be there, and which is highly allergic to the people living there. So everything is tied. And so once again, there's nothing like holistic environment, just environment. It's related to women's issues. It's related to economic issues. It's related to health, COVID-19. It's related to just a noise pollution, is related to migratory birds, is related to marine animals, is related to everything. So everything ties in with everything else. The world is a holistic place and all of us have a part in it, whether we know it or we don't.
Thank you so much, ma'am, for breaking it in such a simplified way. I'm pretty sure all our listeners have understood what exactly we are talking here and discussing about. So now, moving on to the next part, you have been working on creating a difference around you always. The issues that you have addressed has always been very diverse. If we talk about noise pollution or sand mining, illegal sand mining that you have addressed. And one more similarity is that these are some things which time and again, we in the mainstream are not acknowledging it enough. So what is your take? My question to you is that what is your take on that, that no matter what we do, every act of ours has an implication. Thus, walking in an interlinked pattern can be the only way out in the new future to come, wherein people from all walks of life contribute towards the redressal. And added to this, it would be really great if you could explain it to different situations and challenges on ground, like practically that you faced while you're working.
Well, your first question was on holistic environment. So I think noise pollution and sand mining, well, they may seem to be very different. I actually connected in a way. Because the tools you have to deal with any issue are the same. And this took me a very long time to discover that I did both these issues for various reasons. One was because I started with sand mining. I saw the beach near me being ruined. And I couldn't bear it, so I wanted to do something. And then I realized just how difficult it was to do. And especially since I didn't live permanently in that area. And I thought, well, this is too hard for me. Let me do something easier. So I came back to Bombay, where my children were very small. I wanted to spend time with them. So I thought, well, let me take up. I mean, I didn't exactly think, let me take up noise pollution. It was more like I was asked to take up noise pollution by my uncle, who was suffering from noise from a marriage ball near his house. So I said, well, you know, my children are very small and I don't want to give it too much time. So maybe it'll be okay. I'll just do some typing or something like that. But once you start working on issues, and of course, when as time went on, my beach was still being ruined. So I couldn't give that up either. You know, I had to keep doing it. And I didn't realize with either of these two issues that they were actually so important, or they would prove to be so important. But I knew that people told me, you're wasting your time and all of our time because these are rubbish issues which nobody should, you know, they aren't even issues. And you should really take up something that makes sense, like education or poverty or, you know, so many issues which face our world and our country. Why are you doing this? And at the same time, they told me that if you keep doing it, we'll attack you. So these two things didn't hold together, right? Because the sand mafia attacked me in 2004. I was in hospital, nearly killed. Second time I was attacked. And I realized that on the one hand, they're saying these are non-issues and not worth taking up. And on the other hand, they're willing to kill you for taking them up. So these two things don't go together. They don't make sense. And so I, you know, of course, when you're attacked, you have to decide whether you're going to give up because it's too much for you or you're going to continue. So being maybe a little bit crazy, I thought, well, you know, I can't give up now. So I continued and did it. And both of these issues turned out to be really, really serious, important issues which no one had taken up. So I would say everything is a serious, important issue if you just take it up and discover what it is about. Someone has to. And maybe you don't know it when you start, but when you look around you and you find out that something is bothering you, chances are it is an important issue. So, and I also figured out along the way, I mean, as you just talked about holistic environment, that the tools to address these things are the same. They both involve creating data because no data existed. They involve creating awareness because people don't know about these issues. They involve educating authorities, you know, working with the law, through the courts, all these things. And really, those are the same. And I mean, since then, I've worked on other issues as well and discovered that the tools for everything is the same. So, and finally, you know, that again, you come to realize more and more this holistic nature of what you're doing. So air pollution and noise pollution are so closely linked because the way you tackle them are the same. The way people, the way they attack health are the same. Sand mining is so closely linked to biodiversity and, you know, migratory birds and beaches and coasts and rivers and stuff like that, that you can't really talk of them separately. So finally, you come to a situation where you have to decide to draw the line that I can do this much and no more. Because everything is linked. And you also realize that even things like education is linked. But maybe I don't have the expertise to become a teacher. And so I tie up with someone else who can and will do a better job than me. And it works synergistically. So everything is linked. My lawyers have worked for me free of cost for 20 years because they have a particular set of skills which I don't. And you know, there are all kinds of people in different professions. So I come back to this, that you're an environmentalist, whether you know it or not, and whether you acknowledge it or not, because we are all linked to the world we live in. And all of us care about what happens to our own health, our own lifestyle, our own ability to live even if we don't believe that we do, we care about the wider world. And looking after ourselves means looking after the wider world.
Definitely, ma'am. Like the entire situation that you have said, it is high time that we realize that every aspect is somewhere or the other interlinked. And whatever we do is no doubt going to create a difference sooner or later. So before moving to another question, just brief up in between, I got to know about when you were saying in a talk of yours that while you were talking about sand mining, illegal sand mining, there was an Australian agency through which the documentary, they were creating a documentary, and you voiced your support for it, and an entire journey was shown somewhere or the other. So just a simple question out there, that how would you say that the media sources, and more specifically social media, because we are teenagers, like everybody is very much into social media, and how could you, like, what is a piece of advice for the young people out there that how can they legitimately use this and utilize this entire source to create something really good?
Well, it's not an accident that the youth are the ones speaking up most for climate change and policy change to tackle climate change and environment. That's because the youth are going to be most affected by it for the longest period of time. You know, we are witnessing these kind of climate-related events at the end of our lives, kind of. You are witnessing it at the beginning of your lives, and it's going to affect you more for that reason alone than any of us. So the youth have skills which my generation, and tools and abilities which my generation did not. First of all, the most important thing is we did not realize how much each of our actions is going to contribute to this kind of a changing world, and not changing for the better, but changing for the worse in some ways. But you have, and you also have skills and tools at your disposal, which we never had. Like you said, social media, internet, everybody is very savvy with computers, cell phones, how to communicate, how to generate support, which we don't really know. You know, we rely on more traditional forms of communication. And so people often ask this question, that do you think it's a waste of time that youth spend all their time on, you know, on the net or on behind screens? And I don't think so at all. I think that this is a skill you have. Maybe we think it's a waste of time because we don't really understand it. But I do know that during lockdown, when the government tried to change the EI, the Environment Impact Assessment Notification, to allow all kinds of destructive activities like mining in very pristine forests. It was the youth, and we were during lockdown, so the traditional methods of protest didn't work, like going out on the streets. It was the youth who came up with ways of demonstrating, ways of protesting, which shook the government to an extent where they actually blocked websites, where they arrested youth activists, where they did all kinds of things because they didn't know how to handle it. So I'm not going to tell you what you should and shouldn't do. I think you'll have to tell us what we should and shouldn't do, and we need to listen to you. All I can do is to tell you that you're engaged with this whole thing called environment and climate change. Figure out ways to deal with it. You know, sand mining, maybe it was by sheer fluke that I figured out, I understood that there is something called sand mining and it needs to be addressed. But if you ask me, what are the solutions? I'm going to throw the question back at you, actually, because we have some kind of glimmerings of things that could happen. There have been experimentally a lot of projects which have worked. We have in India come out with a lot of solutions which have been very good, like building roads out of plastic by using all kinds of, you know, professor of IIT has worked with one of his PhD students too and informed us very recently that 100% of the debris and the garbage dump, which is another huge environmental hazard, can be recycled to substitute sand. So these things can be done, but it requires people to do R&D, to figure out new ways of doing things, how to tie in the economics of that with the logistics of doing it and the technology, by communicating the need for it, by making the appropriate policy changes for it. So really, I mean, there's a limited extent to what we are able to do that beyond telling you that maybe you guys know or will figure out how to do it. All the new innovations have been driven by very young people. We've had very young billionaires who, you know, even who have come out with alternate energy sources, which we couldn't have imagined, with electric cars, with solar energy as an alternate, with all kinds of things. So I look to you and I say, I'd love to live to see the day when I can say I'd like to live in a house which does not have sand. And here's something that can be done affordably by anybody. Like I can decide to have solar energy powered house or whatever today.
Definitely, ma'am, definitely. Ma'am, while researching for this podcast, I mean, everyone knew about your work always, but when I was specifically reading about you for specifically this podcast, I came across a very fascinating talk of yours. And I was specifically fascinated by this particular segment in the talk, wherein you were explaining about how every issue can be addressed by a mechanism of three separate strata or three separate segments, the law, the advocacy and awareness. Now, as a closing remark for this episode, it would be really great if you could explain that certain segment in brief for our audience.
Well, the law determines what you can and can't do based on the knowledge of people who have made that law. And therefore, the law keeps evolving through court orders, through different ways of engaging with the law, through precedent. And in India, for example, we have a very good system called public interest litigation, which allows any common citizen to address policy change through public interest litigation. And that's something I have used a lot. I am not a lawyer. I have no knowledge of the law. As I said, I rely on professionals to guide me through, help me, work with me, support me. And I support them in figuring out how to have the law on your side and not against you in addressing change. The second is advocacy, because enforcement of the law and also making of the law falls in the hands of politicians and bureaucrats who control the government. So you have to explain to them, tell them what kind of law you're looking at and why it should be implemented. Because you can have the best law in the world. If it isn't implemented, it's of no use. And when the people implementing the law believe that you're being excessive or you're being unreasonable or you're being whatever, you know, then the law is typically not well enforced. It is up to the people. We elect the people who make the law. We also have a lot to do with how the law is enforced, because I'll just give you a very brief example of the noise pollution laws. That when we got the first court order in 2003, we didn't know how to get it implemented. But people started calling me, and advocacy and awareness are almost very closely tied. People started calling me because the first journalist I ever met published my number in the newspaper as the new noise hotline. And I didn't know what to do. So I said, well, you know, ask people to call me. And I didn't expect that hundreds of people will call me. And I didn't know what to do even then. So I asked them to call the police on their 100, which is their control room number. And because they were so flooded with calls, they set up the system, which made me believe that it's not up to us to implement the law. It's up to us to make sure the enforcement and implementation authorities do their job. And that's something people can do. And the third thing I said was what? Legal
awareness.
Law, yeah, that's legal awareness. All these things work with awareness, because people will go to court and interact with the law when they're aware. Maybe my lawyers were also not aware of these issues until they became my lawyers and, you know, took them up. And now they know so much more than me about the legal aspects of the case. People may not have been, or they were aware in a kind of individual way, that people knew that noise is bothering them, but they believed that that was their problem. And they would call me and cry on the phone. You know, I've seen all kinds of really terrible things, like infants having convulsions, an old person threatening to commit suicide, somebody having a mental health psychotic break, all kinds of things, road rage, all these things. But people don't tie them in with the issue. And so to coordinate all these things, the law, the awareness, the advocacy, everything, I think that's just about what I have done. And I think you can plug into this system from just about any field that you're interested in. And I think what I may have left out in my talk there, the talk you're referring to, is the role of technology. Because the solutions come not only through the law, but through technological solutions and new ways of doing things and the youth. So I think that would be what I'd like to end with. I'd also like to say to all of you that I'm so happy that the youth are engaging with this, and anything I can do to help you, please feel free to reach out at any time. My email address, my phone number, WhatsApp, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I'm not so good at. I think that's a youth thing, but I try.
Thank you so much, ma'am. That was really sweet of you. Like, we can't even reiterate enough that it was really a privilege for our entire team to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much, ma'am, for this worthy time that you spent with us right now. So that was it for today's episode. We will meet again next week, Tuesday, sharp at 8, with another such intriguing talk with yet another such eminent speaker. Our podcast is telecasted on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and our very own YouTube channel, Inactor Sri Aurobindo College. Feel free to reach out to us with our recommendations and suggestions at our social media handles. The times are hard, but let us all stay strong, and above all, let us all stay safe. Till then, signing off, your host for today, Rudrani Datta. Until next time.